Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplex and the art house. What's new on video and streaming, and you might also hear about some dead people we like.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Anyway, this is Film Sociology, where you'll find out what's the next cinematic marvel.
It was unbelievable!
And what's just a movie.
Shut up! My God, you have no freaking life!
Okay, here's your host and my dad, Matthew Soucy.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soucy. This show is available on iTunes, and like all of the podcasts here at WFYI, available on Spotify. Well, friends, it's been a big week here at Film Sociology offices. Saturday is my kid's birthday. M turns 21. Now, those who don't know, Emma is now M, E-M-M, with they, them pronouns. So I can do it. You can do it. So, yeah, happy birthday to my kid. I love you very much, buddy. The former kids film correspondent here at Film Sociology, and we talked a couple times this week. They're going to be enjoying a big 21st birthday up in Chicago. And never forget, friends, whether it's your birthday or not, quality versus quantity. Just remember that. This week, we had Halloween, of course, and we got the election coming up. But this week on the show, there's been a number of documentaries I got to watch that I knew of the person, and obviously I got to know a lot more. That's part of the point of documentary filmmaking, is that you get to know more about the said subject. And it was a very good week this week. Opening in theaters this weekend, check your art houses, is a really good documentary called The Return of Tanya Tucker, featuring Brandi Carlile. You got to incorporate that whole thing. And it's the story of Tanya Tucker recording her first album in 17 years, co-produced by Brandi Carlile and Shooter Jennings, who I got to meet at WFYI many moons ago. So we get a nice back and forth between Tanya Tucker's career, when she started recording, I believe, at age 9, started singing at 9, first recording at 13, and if I remember right, made the cover of Rolling Stone at 15. I believe at 13 she got her first number one record, Delta Dawn. So, yeah. So we get that incorporated with Tucker, who is obviously now much older and not necessarily set in her ways, but getting back into the studio and with one of her biggest fans in the world, Brandi Carlile. And I got to listen to more of Brandi. I've heard about her on Facebook. I heard her on Fresh Air. The fact that we have an out lesbian country singer, anything for me that can poke at the old regime, at the old boys' school that is, can be Nashville country, I'm down for that. So the fact that Tucker's going to be recording an album with two musicians that adore her greatly and are going to, there's a lot of comparisons, and it's brought up a couple of times, to the Rick Rubin, Johnny Cash recordings, which are also fantastic. So we get to right from the beginning of the first day of recording, and Tucker's not a perfect subject, not a perfect person. It doesn't go down, the film does not go down the self-destructive artist path that you would expect. Tucker had quite a career in her younger days. And again, we go back and forth on this. First day of recording, there's tequila with red grapefruit juice. And you think it's going to go down that path, and it doesn't. You know, probably the most tense moment of the film is when Tucker doesn't show up for a rehearsal. But it doesn't turn into A Star Is Born. It doesn't turn into that cliche of the, as I mentioned, the self-destructive artist. So we get to see the process, song-making process. And, you know, if you've ever been in a recording studio, you don't just take off your jacket, go into the studio and immediately just create sometimes. Some, not all. You talk to people, you noodle, you come up with ideas. And some days are more productive than others. And what is also really nice throughout the film, there is a through line with the song that is going to play into the film as it goes later on. Carlisle reminded me that if you mention the term outlaw country, hey, Carol, Cheryl, Charlene, you got to add Tanya Tucker to it. I think most people assume, associate it with Johnny Cash and Merle Haggard and Waylon Jennings and Kris Kristofferson and Willie Nelson. But no, Tanya's got to be in there as well. So by the time she was a teen star, and by the time we get into the late 70s, she turns her back on country music and wants to be more of a rock performer. She didn't want to be the little gal singer. If you know country music, you know it. That's every band, male band leader. That they did this with Dolly, they did this with Loretta Lynn, just a little gal singer who comes on and wears a pretty dress and sings and goes away. That Tucker didn't want to do that. Tucker wanted to wear jumpsuits like Elvis did. Tucker named one of her kids Presley, that much of an influence. So we get to see that process. And there's a story that basically country music turned her back on her because she wanted to go down a more rock path. Then she met Glenn Campbell. They go into it a little bit. If you're looking for juicy gossip, you're not going to get that here. But yeah, she was 22 and he was not. He was 44. So there was that aspect. Then we go back to the recording and the finishing of the album. But it is a wonderful process to watch. Brandy supporting her, encouraging her. They also work on the tour, which, like Johnny Cash, we see Tucker playing at the Troubadour in Los Angeles. Brandy wants her to play at more intimate concert venues as opposed to casinos, which is where a lot of aging country artists wind up going to. Yes, it's an hour and 22 minutes before they bring up the TNT album, which is an album. Not so much the record, the cover, and the inside photo that kept me company when I was a young lad. The song is "Bring My Flowers Now" with a nice climax involving the Grammys. So, it's a good comeback story, and yeah, Carlisle holds Tanya Tucker up in the same level as Dolly Parton. The difference is Dolly Parton is a global treasure, and I think what we're hoping is with this film, and it happened with the Grammys in 2019, that more people become aware of Tanya Tucker. The director of this, he says scrolling quickly, is Catherine Horan. Kathleen Horan, who had worked on a documentary about Carlisle called Brandy Carlisle at the Washington Correction Center for Women, had also done an Indigo Girls documentary, and the seamless transitions from present to past are exceptionally good in this one. There will be a mention of somebody mentioning Elvis. I think there's a moment where Tanya and Brandy are in the studio, and Tanya brings up Elvis, and then we go right into the Elvis portion of Tucker's career. Just really nice use of material and being able to go back and forth between the past and the present. So yeah, I'm a sucker for. I'm going to put this film, The Return of Tanya Tucker, featuring Brandy Carlisle, in the same ballpark as Standing in the Shadows of Motown and The Wrecking Crew. The fact that we, in this case, it's one individual, but we get to hear Tanya's story finally, and it's an inspiring look at the process and being a survivor in show business. And also just the support and love that Carlisle has for Tucker is really endearing. So we should all have somebody this supportive behind us in the creative process. So yeah, from Sony Picture Classics, The Return of Tanya Tucker featuring Brandy Carlisle. Highly recommended. Also out there, and this week I think I mentioned the theme is I'm getting to know people I've always I'm aware of, have seen, know of, but didn't know a lot about them. So I'm enjoying this. Another one, this is on video from Kino Lorber, is a documentary called Let There Be Drums. And it goes through the mindset and the history of being a rock drummer. told by some of the best drummers working today, as well as some of the who are exceptional drummers but are second-generation drummers. So some of the talking heads, lowercase t, lowercase h, that come up. Bill Kreutzmann of the Grateful Dead. We have, and then his son Justin is the director of this documentary. But we have moments with Matt Sorum from Guns N' Roses. What timing, man. Taylor Hawkins from the Foo Fighters is on here. I don't know if this was one of the last documentaries he appeared in. Probably. Adrian Young from No Doubt. Chad Smith, not Will Ferrell, from the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Coffee Baker, Ginger's son. Jason Bonham, John's son. Nick Collin, Phil's son. Stuart Copeland shows up, and it goes through, and John Densmore is interviewed, Steven Adler, Mickey Hart, Steve Ferrone, you know, there's a lot, Sandy Nelson, which is, it's a really cool history of the mindset that goes behind being behind the kid. It's not, they're not animal, they're not all, no, they're not all animal, but the drummers from Huey Lewis and the News, and Stray Cats, and Green Day, and Little Richard, Charles Connors, Jane's Addiction. So they talk about their influences and their contributions and what it takes to be a drummer, and to hear their stories. I remember I got to see Coffee Baker a few years ago at the Noodle, but hearing his relationship with his father, the fact that he still breaks down when talking about his father, and the director saying to him that this is about our dads. And there is a nice Valentine to Bill Kreutzmann, Ginger Baker, John Bonham, Phil Collins to a certain degree. But yeah, it's a really nice look at, and also, you know, experts talking with each other about the process. Ringo Starr has a cameo. Chad Smith reminds us always that the drive is the drummer. So if you're in the music and hearing stories by musicians, yeah, look out for Let There Be Drums, which is out on Greenwich Entertainment, as well as Kino Lorber. And then also one I'm really happy I got to watch is Daryl Jones in the Blood. And this is the story of Daryl Jones, who grew up on the south side of Chicago and spent time with Miles Davis, Madonna, and Sting. And, of course, he is now the longtime member of the Rolling Stones. Yeah, he's the guy who replaced Bill Wyman. Let's never forget, Bill Wyman was with the Rolling Stones for 31 years. Daryl Jones is coming up on 28. He's at 28. So he joined the band in 1994. So another kind of cool story about how he was already established, how he became, you know, the other members of the Stones talk about how he became a member of the band, what it took to connect with the greatest rock band in the world. And so we get to see that story. We get to see Jones working on his own material at home, and his life story growing up. And yeah, so it's a nice look at a guy who was kind of that guy. He was known. He's known as the, you know, he's been with the Stones for a long time. And, you know, he's not the one taking the bow at the end, but he's been there for a long ass time. So I'm glad that Daryl Jones is finally getting to tell his story. So look for Daryl Jones in the Blood, also from Greenwich Entertainment and Kino Lorber. And finally this week, the documentary Loving Highsmith, The Lives and Loves of Patricia Highsmith. Don't know the name, but I knew of her work. This is the woman that wrote, under a pseudonym in the 1950s, the novel that would become much later down the road, the film Carol. It's interesting because we had just talked about the film Carol because the writer and director of Call Jane did the adaptation for the film Carol. And it is said that Carol was the first lesbian novel published with a happy ending. So, and this is back in the 50s. And then Highsmith would later go to create the Talented Mr. Ripley and that series, which had been made in numerous films, Purple Noon, Talented Mr. Ripley, Ripley's Game, American Friend, Once You Kiss a Stranger, Deep Water. But it tells her story of Patricia Highsmith growing up in Texas, came from a major Texas rodeo family, mom divorced dad 9 days before she was born. The what is a through line throughout the film is Highsmith and the unattainable love she got from her mother. They moved to New York City when she was six.
And the story is she's was always interested in women. And you know how this kind of went over around the household. Mom made her go on a date with a boy, and that didn't go well. And if you wore pants, you dressed like a boy. You sound like a boy. Highsmith never told her mother that she wrote the novel Carol because she had a pen name for it. And then Highsmith winds up going to Europe. And then from then on only wrote about men. So in this case, the character of Ripley, and makes a point of saying that he enjoys murder except for the very first one, which was the man that he fell for. And if I remember, in Talented Mr. Ripley, it's the Jude Law character. Highsmith winds up living in France, most of the time happy, but then had to leave for Switzerland for tax issues. And she became married to her writing as opposed to another person. So a bittersweet story. Strangers on a Train was the other one that she is known for in the film world. So, and then it was a big deal later, years and years later, that she was able to finally release Carol under her own name. The less we talk about her later years and her diary over certain minorities, the better. But yeah, it's another fascinating look at a fascinating artist. So Loving Highsmith is also out from Zeitgeist Films, and it's out on Kino Lorber Video. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. The other film I got to watch this week, because Halloween is coming up, again, another title from Kino Lorber. But this is one of those films that I'd always heard of and I'd never seen from start to finish. And since it was Halloween week, I went down and checked out the 1981 slasher movie Happy Birthday to Me. As I was pointing out to my kid talking about this week, by the time we get to – oh, that was the other thing. So M told me that they got to watch the first Friday the 13th film for the first time. So we went into a long chat the other night over the slasher movies, the dead teenager movies of the late 70s, early 80s, which I remember watching with because I was a kid. But the fact that we had all of the holiday horror movies, Halloween, New Year's Evil, and then we get into the dates like Friday the 13th, the day after Halloween, New Year, Thanksgiving, one of the best parodies, one of the best horror parody trailers of all time. But yeah, we get to Happy Birthday to Me, which is a step above the average dead teenager movie because you have some actors of note. This was the first feature film of Melissa Sue Anderson. This is, I believe, the first film she did after her run on Little House on the Prairie. Glenn Ford shows up as a psychiatrist. He's really cashing a paycheck in this one. And it's directed by J. Lee Thompson, who, 2 years prior was best known for The Guns of Navarone, the original Cape Fear. By the end of the 70s, he was doing kind of A to B level action movies, and by the 1980s would be working primarily at Canon Films, working predominantly with Charles Bronson. So there's some production value, and you have a filmmaker that knows how to work a camera. You have actors who know how to act. It's not just dumb. And there's a number of these slasher movies. You have a lot of young people starting out. M was amused to see a very young Kevin Bacon in Friday the 13th. And there's others in this film like Sharon Acker and Lisa Longless and Tracy Bergman who have been involved in this film. So in this one, shot in Montreal and upstate New York, there is a kind of a snooty rich kids college school, and kids are getting picked off one by one. And I remember they were saying, yeah, the most bizarre murders imaginable. Not entirely, although there are three moments that really stand out. One is, and you've seen it, if you know the poster, know what I mean, of the shish kebab skewer going through the mouth of one victim. One involving a scarf and a rota and the gears of a motorcycle, and then one involving weightlifting where somebody is holding up too much of a weight for them to bench press, and a weight is dropped on their crotch and then it crushes their larynx. Anyway, it's very silly. The film is also known for, there is they had some changes of the script near the end of the film because they didn't know how it was being rewritten so late into production, that it's a film that suffers from having one twist too many. It's not a bad it could have gone one or two ways, and they decided to go the other way, and it was just too many cooks. It was just too many twists, and I don't want to give it away. And yes, I know the film is 40 years old, but you know, it's my show. I'm in a good mood. So if they had taken one out, and part of it involves the Melissa Anderson character, who's doing a lot of acting. This is, you know, she's trying to obviously go the opposite way of Little House on the Prairie, and it shows, and it's fine. But yeah, I wish the producers and I wish Columbia had trusted the instinct of the film and just made it. They could have gone down a much darker path and been a more memorable film. But they added an extra twist, although the twist on top of that's better. But you could have gone down a much darker path. I'll just say it that way when it comes to the release. So yeah, it's a step above the myriad of slasher movies that would come out post Halloween, post Friday the 13th. But that's about all it's got going for it. So yeah, Kino Lorber has Happy Birthday to Me put out on DVD and Blu-ray. Speaking of Halloween, I got to do, we will grab a pencil a little later on, but on Halloween night, I did ask what movies you like to have on when the trick-or-treaters arrive. I asked this on Facebook. For me, it's either Ed Wood or Night of the Hunter. So we get a bonus grab a pencil. Here's the Halloween edition of what do you put on Halloween night? Abby writes, Little Shop of Horrors or Stranger Things, and then writes, not a film. Thank you, Abby. We know. Dan refers to Ed Wood as Landau's greatest. Yeah, I love Martin Landau in that. Doug writes, different every year. Next up, finishing watching House of Dark Shadows. Dylan writes, Spider Baby, every year for as long as I can remember. Kim, oh, nice touch, Kim. Kim mentions Mad Monster Party from 1967. That's a Frank Rankin and Bass, Sky Point. Mike writes The Wolfman. Amber writes, on my daughter's first Halloween, we were gone alone. So, of course, I watched The Strangers. Man, that's rough. Robert writes, nothing on the TV. The Silence of the Lambs soundtrack on speakers. Wow. Austin Glidden. Medium Cool Podcast. I mean, it would be really fun to have something like Dead Alive, but we probably just put on Hocus Pocus. Well, that happens. Daniel writes Mommy Dearest. Daniel, I would love to see Mommy Dearest on as the trick-or-treaters arrive at your house. Kayla writes Nightmare on Elm Street. Always. Abby writes This Evening It Was Reanimator. Okay. Michael writes, Evil Dead, friends since grade school, him and Ken. Apparently this is an annual thing. Brian writes, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, I Smell Children. Wow, nice one. And then finally, Tom writes, sadly living in a cul-de-sac where the kids are grown. We haven't had trick-or-treaters in a few years. More candy for us. When I did have them, it was the Ghost and Mr. Chicken. All right, that's good stuff, to the folks. Thank you on that one. Really good. All right, let's go around the horn, and then we have a couple dead people we like because we never have time for dead people we don't like, and then we'll grab a pencil. So the drive-ins are closed. It is November. So, but kudos to having to the Tibbs and the Skyline for being open in October. Now, granted, it's warmer than normal, but I'm glad we have drive-ins open in October. Friday, November 4th at IU Cinema at 7 p.m. from 1930. Earth, arguably the most famous Ukrainian film and recognized as a masterpiece of world cinema. That is happening Friday at 7 p.m. Saturday, November 5th, world premiere live music event of Cure Fidel, world premiere of a 1923 silent film, the world premiere of a new original score composed for Gene Epstein's French Impressionist classic. That is happening Saturday at 7 p.m. Tuesday, November 10th, Robot and Frank from 2012. Thursday, November 10th at 7 p.m. Friday, November 11th at 7 p.m. from 2019, Atlantis. Saturday, November 12th at 4 p.m. from 2022, Maika, the girl from another galaxy. Saturday, November 12th at 7 p.m. from 1995, Mabarossi. Tuesday, November 15th at 7 p.m., the documentary from 1994, Black Is, Black Ain't. So all of that is happening at IU Cinema at the Historic Art Craft Theater in Franklin, Friday and Saturday, November 4th and 5th at 2 and 7:30 p.m. from 2001, The Majestic, with Jim Carrey, written directed by Frank Darabont. I'm one of the few people that actually like that film. So, no, that's cool. And to see that in an old movie house, that's even cooler. It's not music, it's not film, but I'll mention it. Tuesday, 2 p.m., November 6th, an afternoon with Brenda Williams. Great singer. Friday and Saturday, November 11th and 12th, 2 and 7:30 p.m. Next Friday and Saturday, The Hunt for Red October. Tuesday, November 15th, the documentary The Best We've Got, the Carl Erskine story. Friday and Saturday, November 18th, 2 and 7:30 p.m. from 1992, Batman Returns. November 25th, 26th, and 27th, 2 and 7:30 p.m. on Friday and Saturday, 2 and 5:30 p.m. on Sunday, Elf. And Thursday, December 1st at 7:30 p.m., because you can, Die Hard. All of that is happening at the Historic Art Craft Theater in Franklin. All right, let's raise a glass for a couple dead people we like, because we never have time for dead people we don't like. Julie Powell, who is best known as the Julie from the film Julie and Julia, died at 49, way too young. This is the character that Amy Adams plays in the film, the food writer that creates a blog and attempts to recreate all of Julia Child's dishes from Julia's cookbook, The Art of French Cooking. And, yeah, we know Julia didn't like it. We just kind of pass over that. And, yes, I'm one of the few ones. I believe Chris Lloyd from the Film Yap is as well. I don't mind the Amy Adams portion of the film. It is called Julie and Julia. Yes, the Meryl Streep as Julia Child is exceptionally good. And maybe the Julie portion is pale by comparison, but that's the whole point of the book, and that's the whole point of the blog, and the whole point of the film. So kudos. Thank you, Julie, for that inspiration. And for you fans of Slapshot, Andrew Duncan, who played broadcaster Jim Carr, has died. And he was one of, I mean, some of the lines I can't quote, but at least he's not chicken. He may be bald, but he's not chicken. But Andrew Duncan was one of those guys. Credits go all the way back to the 1950s through the 1980s. Prior to Slapshot, and so I had seen him in things. So he was an early that guy. Films like The Virgin President, Francis Coppola's The Rain People, Loving, Love Story, The Hospital, which is one of my dad's favorite dark comedies, as is one of mine, Parades, Foreplay, Network, and then, yeah, played Jim Carr in Slapshot in 1977, later appeared in An Unmarried Woman, Firepower, Little Romance, Last Embrace, Used Cars, The Gig, and his last credit from 1987, Morgan Stewart's Coming Home. So, yeah, thank you, Jim Carr, and salute to Andrew Duncan, who is a part of film history because the Slapshot cult is very strong. And finally, for dead people we like, because we never have time for dead people we don't like, actor Andrew Pine passed away. His credits go all the way back to the 1950s. A lot of TV, and then one of the first films was playing James Keller in the 1962 film version of The Miracle Worker. Continued to do a lot of westerns, a lot of military films, and TV. Appeared in 1966's Texas Across the River, The Devil's Brigade, Bandolero. I need to revisit Bandolero. Chisholm, Brian Hart's great theme song for you. I know you enjoy that. Squares, Simon, King of the Witches, Crypt of the Living Dead, One Little Indian, Terror Circus, The Centerfold Girls. You kind of see where this is going. Had an uncredited role as Fiona's husband in Rooster Cogburn. 1976's Grizzly, The Town That Dreaded Sundown, for you cult film fans out there. The Evil from 1978. Played Father Tom in Amityville 2, The Possession. That's a rough ride there. Appeared in Eliminators back in 1986. was Brigadier General Richard B. Garnett in Gettysburg, and then revisited the role in Gods and Generals. Deadly Exposure Without Evidence. Yes, these sound like straight-to-video 90s films. Uncredited as the Sheriff in Sweet Home Alabama. Was in The Dukes of Hazzard, Daltrey, Calhoun, and his second-to-last credit from 2012, the Reverend Jonathan Hawthorne in Rob Zombie's The Lords of Salem, his final performance. Final credit, 2015, in Beyond the Farthest Star. So there you go. Salute to you, Andrew. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. All right, grab a pencil. Let's find out what you've been watching this week, although, you know, Facebook hasn't been that generous. We start on Twitter. Ironically. Your Canadian Girlfriend writes, Audrey Rose from 1977, Topic of Cancer, Sonny Chiba's Yakuza Wolf, and the Bodyguard Kiba films. Thank you, Your Canadian Girlfriend. Benjamin writes, Tar. Ed writes, The Black Phone, just terrific. Tammy writes, It, the original miniseries, as well as the two chapters of It, the movie. So there is that. Bethany writes, it was not last week, but I finally saw Marcel Duchamp with shoes on, and it was delightful. So thank you, gang. We head over to Facebook. Dustin writes, The Bridge on the River Kwai, Breaking Away, The King and I Recording a Hollywood Dream. This is a TV film from 1993. Sweeney Todd, the Demon Barber of Fleet Street in Concert. Live from Lincoln Center, The American Songbook. Oh, I got to talk to Stephen on that. And the 2003 TV film version of The Lion in Winter. Lou Harry writes Scarecrow. That's pretty much it this week. That's okay. Eric writes, rewatched Horror of Dracula on All Hallows Eve for my money. Still the best interpretation of Stoker. And finished season 3 of Alfred Hitchcock's Presents, which had 2 or 3 great episodes either written or adapted from Roald Dahl, including the landmark Lamb to the Slaughter, where Barbara Bel Geddes kills her faithless husband with a frozen leg of lamb. Good call there, Eric. That is a nice one there. Melissa writes, Run, Sweetheart, Run, The Original Halloween, In the Tall Grass, and The Faculty. Jamie writes, Frozen and Frozen 2, Coco, Lion King, Lion King 1.5, and Lion King 2, Simba's Pride. Thank you, Jamie. Thank you, Doctor. Terry writes, The Keep, The Hidden, and Vampire's Kiss, which features one of Nick Cage's funkiest performances, which is saying something. All the more interesting when you figure out what he was doing there, such as incorporating Boris Karloff into his very strange accent/speech pattern, the Dracula character of Renfield into his body movements as the film goes on, and Max Schreck into his vampire persona. Doesn't always work, mind you, but it's fun to watch. Thank you, Terry. Good observations there. Robert Muggy writes, I Married a Witch, Air Force, The Importance of Being Earnest, Louis Armstrong's Black and Blues, Los Ojos Vendados, Nope, The Glass Key, and This Gun for Hire. Also, for anyone who subscribes to the Criterion Channel and doesn't know, my 1980 film Sun Ra, A Joyful Noise started 6 months of streaming there as of Tuesday. I thought it was supposed to start a month ago, but I was misinformed. So yeah, thank you, Robert. Yes, look up Robert Muggy's documentary, Sun Ra, A Joyful Noise, and look up Robert Muggy's films in general. He has a website with his name on it, so go check that out. Down writes, Last Flag Flying, Cranston and Carell were great. Yeah, that made my top 5, Don, when that came out. And not enough people have seen that film, so good call there. Blues Brothers 2000, too many people have seen this one. And The Good Nurse. Doug writes, The Bride of Frankenstein, Night of the Demon, a.k.a. Curse of the Demon, Rain Tree County, House of Dark Shadows, Death on the Nile. One of the best Agatha Christie adaptations. He's talking about the 1978 film version with Peter Ustinov. I remember seeing that at the Dort Highway. Was it the Flint Cinema? Back in my hometown. But yeah, I got to see that on a big screen. Very cool. Eric writes, having binged most of Deadwood, I just learned of the cinematic finale of sorts, so I'm looking forward to that. The new Hellraiser wasn't the worst thing I've seen. And finally, Craig writes Scream and Scream Again, as well as Of Human Bondage. And, well, at least those films weren't put together. It wasn't a double feature, was it? So, and there you go, friends. That's what you've been watching this week. So hopefully you got to watch some good movies that are new, or at least new to you, as well as falling back on old favorites. Friends, some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. There's plenty out there. Happy birthday, M. Happy 21st. I love you so much. I wish I could be there to celebrate, but I'm not 21. You are. Quality over quantity. Never forget that. Anyway, and that's for you listeners as well. So, and Golden Globus. Sorry, guys, I almost forgot this. We got a twofer from Golden Globus this week. For Halloween, they discussed John Carpenter's The Fog, which is one I need to revisit. And then they discussed Vice Squad, which I remember watching in the early incarnations of HBO. It was my first encounter with the powerhouse actor Wings Hauser. Very impressionable. Season Hubley's in it as well, Nina Blackwood, among others. But yeah, that messed me up a little bit for my little 11, 12-year-old brain. But because like my first encounters with Hauser was this, and then an episode of Hunter, which Golden Globus already did a tippy-tap on. So anyway, but yeah, check out Vice Squad. It's grungy and fun. And listen to the Golden Globus, guys. So there you go. All right. We'll try this again next week. Thanks for listening. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan. Happy birthday, Em. I love you.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
Okay. We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!
Soft kitty, warm kitty, little ball of fur. Happy kitty, sleepy kitty, purr, purr, purr.